This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscoane sitting in for Terry Gross. Sierra Leone is one of the poorest countries in the world. A former British colony, it's rich in natural resources, including diamond mines. But decades of government mismanagement and corruption and an eight-year civil war has devastated the West African nation. In 1996, Ahmed Kaba became the first democratically elected president of Sierra Leone. But his administration has been undermined by rebel forces, the Revolutionary United Front, led by Fode Senko and supported by neighboring Liberia. The RUF has terrorized the civilian population, killing perhaps as many as 60,000 and mutilating thousands more. Many people, including children, have had arms and legs chopped off, and many civilians have fled the countryside in fear. African-led peacekeeping forces, along with the Sierra Leone military, have fought against the RUF, but they've been underfunded and outmanned. There have been stories of atrocities committed by these forces as well. In early July, the government signed a controversial peace treaty with the RUF, which gives the rebels amnesty for human rights violations and seats in the government. My guest, Zainab Bangoura, is a human rights and pro-democracy activist in Sierra Leone. She founded the Campaign for Good Governance and organized local women during the 96 election to keep the voting free and fair. The rebels have targeted her with death threats. Zainab Bangoura is visiting the States to meet with members of Congress and various humanitarian groups. I asked her about the Revolutionary United Front and what their politics are.
This is one thing we have always challenged them to, and as we said, they don't have an agenda, they don't have a political agenda. The documents which they have tried to use as their political documents called Footpath to Democracy, it's a combination of extracts from Mao Tse-tung, from Amilcar Cabral, from various people, and in that they included a song. But as far we know, from all the documents they have posted in the internet, they have not got any document. And that is not a political document. It's a statement made by them. So up to as I speak to, after 9 years of war, we have not been able to see any document that has given us an ideology of what they want to do and who exactly they are and what the interests they are trying to protect.
Some people call them a criminal organization. Do you?
Well, I think the reason we all do that is because of the atrocities they have committed on the civilians. Because when they started the war, they said that they were coming to protect, but they have committed the worst atrocities that Africa has seen for the past 30 years. And as a result of that, people feel that they have done the worst thing. So they are a criminal, because if you can afford to commit those atrocities committed against 2-month-old babies, you know, 1-year-old babies, old women, illiterate people, peasants. So you are not a political organization, you're a criminal organization.
Tell us, though, about these atrocities. And there have been, of course, killings associated with this group, but many mutilations of the civilian population. Tell us some of the stories that you've been told about what's happened.
Well, not only stories have been told, stories that people I have seen, people I have spoken to, they have cut up the limbs. We have now a camp of amputees, people who are without limbs, who are without arms, whose sometimes stomachs are slit. The people's ears are cut off, their eyes are plucked out. As children as young as 2 months old, like I mentioned, the youngest victim we have now in Sierra Leone is an 8-month-old baby. His foot was amputated when he was 2 months old. His father was killed. The grandmother was killed. The mother managed to survive. Now she's a beggar in the streets of Freetown. We also have a victim, a 2-year-old girl whose arm was amputated. We have still not been able to identify the father because the mother was killed. And the grandmother who was carrying at the time the shot has also died. So up to now, we don't know who the father is. And of course, it's a young baby she cannot identify. So the atrocities goes beyond even our own belief and understanding. We still do not understand how that thing could happen in our own country.
And you're talking about amputations with machetes, with various kinds of knives. What, they would come into a village or come into a home?
Yes, normally what they do, they have guns and machete. They come to a village, they surround the village, and they shoot at random. So some people are killed and some escape. And they line up the civilians, mostly poor people, and they ask them to put their arms on a piece of board and they chop it. And it's ironic, sometimes they ask you whether you want a long sleeve or a short sleeve, which means you want your arm to be chopped at the at the elbow or you want it to be chopped at the ankle, they chop it. They ask you to make the decision. So they line up the citizens and they chop it. Depends who you meet. Sometimes people prefer to chop up the foot. Sometimes those ones will opt to chop up the arm. Sometimes they will slice your ears. And sometimes they slit stomach. So it all depends on who you come across and what they will want to do. But they normally line up the villagers in a row and they chop their arms one after the other.
Is there any way to know how many people have been the target of this campaign by the RUF?
It's the RUF have attacked each and every part of Sierra Leone. Even the city has been attacked twice. In January of 1996, the city was invaded and over 6,000 people died. Two-thirds of the city was destroyed and they abducted so many girls they took away and they amputated over hundreds of people, and we still have them in the hospital. So every part of the country has been affected. No part of the country has been saved from these atrocities.
Is the campaign then designed to drive people from Sierra Leone?
Well, I think it's a matter of trying to terrorize the population to such an extent that you'll have to accept them. You'll not have an alternative. You have to live with them. And I think that is what they're doing. And it reminds of what happened in Liberia, because during the elections in Liberia, the citizens actually sang, "You kill my father, you kill my mother, I vote for you." And that was the slogan they used to vote for the present president of Liberia. And I think that's what they want to introduce to Sierra Leone. You terrorize the citizens to a situation where they have to accept you out of fear, not out of respect, not out of love, but just for the fact that they are so afraid of you, they can't see anything.
Well, I'm wondering, in a poor country like Sierra Leone, if someone is missing a leg or an arm, what can someone do to support themselves or support their family?
Well, basically, most of them are in the streets begging. The international NGOs, a particular one called Handicap International, is actually trying to build artificial limbs and arms for these people. They are now have their own camp, which is in the capital city, and resources are being put to teach them to write, to teach them to use their hands, to use artificial limbs and others. But even that is not very easy because nothing has been planned yet for them. But in the program that the donors are trying to put together, they feel that some amount of support should be given to those people to start their own life. But for people who have got two of the arms cut off, you can't do anything. So this is sort of some of the things that they're going through. We as a country do not know how we're going to deal with this. And unfortunately, we have still not been able to have access throughout the rest of the country. So we do not know exactly the exact number of people that are going to be victims of this and what we're going to do with them. For now, what the government is doing is try to identify an area where they can sit down and they can be given artificial limbs and teach how to use that to eat and at least to do basic things for themselves. But their future is still not decided.
And that's our guest today. Her name is Zainab Bangoura. She's a human rights activist and pro-democracy leader in Sierra Leone. I also learned from many of the reports that I read that there's been forced conscription of young boys, many of them forced into the military, many of them forced into some form of servitude. What can you tell us about that?
Well, normally, as I mentioned earlier on, when the RUF attack a village, they actually surround it and they abduct the young boys and the young girls. The young boys, they actually take to retrain, and in most cases, they are so heavily drugged. And these are the boys who actually commit some of the worst atrocities. They are under heavy drugs. They have as young as 10 years old, 8 years, 12 years. And these boys are so drugged that they don't know exactly what they're doing. Some of them have, people have claimed that some of them have killed their own families, that they've destroyed their own homes. They have been used to commit some of the worst atrocities. So they have a pattern of abduction. And the UN, the United Nations Envoy, Special Envoy of the Secretary General on Children Affected by the War, has been to Sierra Leone on a few occasions and has pleaded with them to release these children. And the UNICEF also is working very closely to try to get these children out. But sometimes they are in such terrible conditions that it's, even when you bring them back, you find it difficult for them to rehabilitate. The UNICEF has created a home in Sierra Leone where we have a lot of these ex-combatant children, you know, that they are trying to rehabilitate and get them back to normal life. Of course, the second group, as I mentioned, are the girls who are used actually as sex slaves.
And so you're talking about rapes? You're talking about taking young girls from their families?
Yes, young girls who have been abducted and are being used as sex slaves. In our organization, in our office, we have been dealing with some of these rape victims, and most of them actually have been gang raped, which means they have been raped by several men at the same time, and some as young as 12 years old. We've got a victim as young as 11 years old. And when the military, the government forces sometimes overtake these towns, they release some of these girls. And the rebels themselves have tried to release. But sometimes the conditions are so terrible of these girls. And because rape is such a stigma within our community, family just collect their children and keep them home. We have to have field officers who go out into these communities and identify these girls, and we take them for medical. Sometimes some need serious surgical operations, which we have done with the support of donors, and after that their lives are ruined. And some of these victims, at least we have got one of them who has died of AIDS, and few of them have AIDS.
Well, I want to talk a bit more, and I do want to talk about that peace agreement, but first we have to take a short break. And my guest today on Fresh Air is Zainab Bangoura. She's a human rights activist, a pro-democracy leader in Sierra Leone, where a civil war has been raging since 1991. They had their first democratic election in 1996, and we'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Zainab Bangoura. She's a human rights activist and a pro-democracy leader in Sierra Leone. Well, Sierra Leone had its first democratic election in 1996, and I know that's when you began your organization, Campaign for Good Governance. What were some of the things that you did to ensure that democracy came to Sierra Leone?
We participated in street demonstration. You know, we went into the streets, we collected women, we had press conferences, we had leaflets and banners to force the military government then to have the election, because they were not prepared, not only for them to have the election, but for them not to participate in the election. Because as we all know, in most African countries, the military leaders themselves change over, you know, and become the candidates for the election. So we had two battles, not only to force them to have an election, but also to make sure that they do not participate so that we can have a free and fair election. And we galvanized the entire civil society. We got the women, most of the women leaders at grassroots communities, because we find out during this time that the communities were well organized. But the only thing was that they were more organized on social things. Mm. So we brought the leaders together and we took them through a series of seminars and workshops, explaining to them what it was democracy, what it will mean in their life, the changes it will make, and the benefit it will be for the country. And when the military government attempted to change the date and other things, it was easier for us to get all those people into the streets. And we had one of the biggest demonstrations, so there was no way they could stop us. And during elections, attempts were made. They tried to fire into the voting lines, and grenades and machine guns were used, but the people stood up. Some people died, of course, but at the end of the day, we were able to have the elections.
And I'm curious how many people turned out to vote in Sierra Leone's first democratic election.
Oh, thousands and thousands of people. We had over 90% turnover.
90%?
Everybody that was able. Yes, 90% turnover. Everybody that was able came to vote.
Well, you spoke at the President Kaba's inauguration in 1996. What did you say?
Well, I think I told him that we were the force that elected him, and that if he doesn't do what we want, we'll kick him out like we did with the military.
Were you just that plain spoken about it?
Oh, yes.
Okay. And what was the reaction at the inauguration?
Well, he promised us that he was going to do exactly what we wanted. And I must say he has tried. He is one of the first leaders in our country who, on every step he takes, he actually consults civil society. He's opened a line of communication with civil society, even though in several occasions he's not taken the advice we have given. But he always, on each and every occasion, consults civil society. And if he's wrong, he sometimes apologizes. So he kept a very good line of communication with the civil society, especially the women's group.
Well, in early July, the government signed a peace agreement with the rebel leader Sanko, the rebel leader head of the RUF, the Revolutionary United Front. And tell us what's included in this peace accord. What does it say?
The first thing is that it's obviously there was a ceasefire, that the various factions should stop fighting. But the important thing, I think, about this agreement is the issue of power sharing and the blanket amnesty that was given to the rebels. You know, because of the atrocities they have committed, it's been a big issue to get them on the negotiation table, because everybody's talking that if you have committed atrocities that has been committed in Sierra Leone, there's no way you're going to go scot-free. So it's been a very big problem getting them to accept the fact that there has to be investigations. And they know that if that is put in their agreement, they will obviously be tried and they will be found guilty. So in this agreement that was signed on the 7th of July, they were given blanket amnesty that nobody can try them in any court of law in Sierra Leone for all the atrocities they have committed from the very first day of the war up to the day that the agreement was signed.
I'm curious what the reaction in Sierra Leone was to this part of the peace accord. How did the people respond to that?
It's a very bitter pill for us as Sierra Leoneans to swallow. But also the fact that this war has destroyed over 90% of the city, of the country, and has killed over 60 or more thousand of people. And as you know, a lot of people have been amputated, hundreds and hundreds of people. And two-thirds of the Sierra Leone population is displaced. So a lot of people have realized that we have to move up with our life. And if that is going to give us peace, I mean the real, durable peace, Sierra Leoneans might be able to deal with it. But the problem Sierra Leoneans have is that they don't show, because these are people who have committed these atrocities unprovoked. And the atrocities have been committed on civilian population, on poor people, peasants, not government ministers. So people find it, why do we have to give that kind of amnesty and blanket amnesty? And people believe before the amnesty should have been given, we as a nation should have sat down to discuss it. Vis-a-vis like you do in South Africa, like, people only qualify for the amnesty after they've gone through a certain procedure.
Is it, though, a challenge for you to give up on perhaps a truth and reconciliation type commission or some kind of discussion about human rights if it brings some degree of democracy and ends the fighting? Are you willing to live with that?
I don't think we have an alternative. A government we elected and gave the mandate to negotiate on our behalf has already signed an agreement. So it's an agreement we have to live with. They took out the justice, which means that you can't take action against them, and we're going to have a truth and reconciliation commission. The United Nations is trying to work on that to set up this truth and reconciliation commission. But of course, one of the criticisms is that what will attract or what will force these people to come to the commission when already you've given them amnesty? Because in South Africa, it is the commission that actually gives the amnesty. Here, they've already been given the amnesty. So what interest will they have to come to the commission to come and talk and ask for forgiveness? So these are some of the problems that we have to deal with. But we believe that if it can give us peace, we have to learn to live with it. But we must talk about it. We can't leave it because, like I mentioned earlier, the atrocities that were committed have gone beyond our own understanding. These are not typical of our society. So the society is still in a state of shock to understand that their own children can behave this way. So we need to know what actually went wrong. Were mistakes made by various people that led for our own brothers and sisters to become beasts, animals? Because according to what they have done, it's difficult for you to understand that any human being can do that to his own human being, let alone to their brothers and sisters. So I don't think we can have actual peace, you know, and peace is not the absence of war. I think it goes beyond that.
I'm wondering whether you think this power-sharing part of the accord will work in Sierra Leone, where this democratically elected government has to share power with rebel leaders.
It's the power sharing issue actually is worse off to Sierra Leoneans than the amnesty, to be honest enough, because we are just beginning our democracy. You know, we are laying the foundation for everlasting democracy. Remember that we have not had a democratically elected government in 30 years. So we were just experimenting. And we thought that to be able to actually survive as a democratic government, we need to go according to the rules of the game. So obviously, if these people had not had not qualified to be in government, we do not feel that we have to compromise our principles to actually have them in government. And worst off, especially when they have committed so much atrocity, it is one thing to deal with, to forgive the man, to be asked to forgive somebody who has committed atrocity against you. It is another thing to have that person to become your leader.
To reward them, in a sense.
Well, exactly. So this is the reason that the issue of the power sharing has become a big issue. And I think that is also going to affect to a large extent the implementation of the agreement, because already there are hiccups in terms of the interpretation of the power sharing thing, because according to the agreement, the government, the Revolutionary United Front should nominate four people for cabinet positions and four people for deputy who should be appointed by the president. They now are insisting that the president should give them the portfolio, the ministries, before they can appoint. So the interpretation and the implementation is going to be the issue of this agreement. That is where the test case lies. And I think that is a big problem, because if you give them ministries that are going to affect lives of people and they have to deal with these people, it's going to be a very bitter pill to swallow.
Zainab Bangoura is a human rights activist and pro-democracy leader in Sierra Leone. She'll be back with us in the second half of the show. I'm Marty Moscoane, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscoane, in for Terry Gross. Let's continue our conversation with Zainab Bangoura. She's a human rights activist and pro-democracy leader in Sierra Leone, which has been devastated by an eight-year civil war. She founded the Campaign for Good Governance in 1996 when Sierra Leone had its first democratic election. She's been the target of death threats by the rebel group, the Revolutionary United Front, which has waged a campaign of terror in Sierra Leone since 1991. The government signed a controversial peace treaty with the RUF in early July, which gave amnesty to the rebels and authority within the government. This civil war that began in Sierra Leone in 1991 certainly has raged on. And I'm wondering, as you were watching NATO forces and the United States involvement in the former Yugoslavia in Europe, what you thought about U.S. policy towards Africa and, in this case, towards Sierra Leone?
As far as the U.S. policy is concerned in Africa, we always believe that, U.S. has very little interest, especially not a security arrangement in Africa, because we've had series of wars in Africa. After the experience in Somalia, they have not been able to help. Look what's happened in Rwanda. But to be very specific of Sierra Leone, I personally and a lot of other Sierra Leonean feel betrayed.
Betrayed?
The reason, yes, betrayed. We feel betrayed by the United States.
Because you were promised something that wasn't delivered?
Well, I felt that we did not know about democracy. I was born in a democratic country, but I did not grow up in a democratic country. So I do not know what democracy is about until when I came to a program in the United States for young African leaders in 1994. And I was given the impression that democracy was the future of our countries, and I went home and I committed myself to the promotion of democracy. I walked right into the United States Embassy and I said to them, I want to work on democracy. And they thought I was crazy, but I said so, And the United States government since then have given us a lot of support. They have followed us and they have encouraged us and they have told us that that is the future for our country. And throughout these 3 or 4 years, they have stood by us. For them now to come and say to us, you don't have an opportunity, you don't have anything to say, these people, you have to accept them. For us who have risked our lives, who have gone on the firing line, who have died for this democracy, that the United States feels that that is the future, the land of freedom, the liberty, all these things that we have worked so closely with the United States to achieve. Where did we go wrong? What happened that they can't support us? That when it comes to the most difficult time of our period in achieving what we want, the things that we believe in together with them, the principles and values we share together with them, they have refused to support us. So at the end of the day, because the military forces were starved of support, unlike what happened in Kosovo with NATO coming, we had to succumb. We had to have these people. So all this we're talking about, power sharing and the issue of amnesty, could never have taken place if we had won our war in a military way. But because we couldn't, we were dragged into the negotiation table, and we were dragged at a time when the government was at its weakest. So it had to accept all the conditions that were created for us.
Was the government in Sierra Leone pressured to sign this peace accord by the United States?
I think to a large extent, yes, because the United States ambassador was there throughout the process. He was one of the, I don't want to say mentors or facilitator. He was moved from Freetown and relocated to Lome to be there with the other people, the United Nations, and the British sent somebody from Sierra Leone. And also the United States also supported the people who drafted the agreements. And obviously, informations were given to the government that these are some of the weaknesses that the governments have. And so it was difficult for the government to say no when it realized that it gets 70% or 80% of its revenue from the international community, because most of the mining areas had been occupied by the rebels. So the government depends on the international community for support. So if they feel that at this particular time, it's better and in the interest of the government to actually sign an agreement and put behind them this war, the government could not say no. Even though we gave them the mandate, they shouldn't do it as a civil society.
While this civil war was going on, what kind of international support was there for the African forces within Sierra Leone that were fighting against the rebels?
Well, it's very ridiculous because, I stand to be corrected, but we were told that the military people, the ECOMOG, the West African military force, were using $1 million a day. And the first year, the United States gave them $4 million. And that is for 4 days out of 365 days.
And ECOMOG is kind of like NATO, right?
It's kind of like a NATO force. ECOMOG is a regional force like NATO, and it comprises of 16 member states in the West African sub-region. All the members in the West African sub-region are part and parcel of the ECOMOG forces. Nigeria is the biggest contributor because Nigeria is the biggest country in the sub-region. So it's like NATO, like you have NATO in Europe, you know, trying to protect the interests of the European countries and trying to intervene in Europe whenever there is a problem like they did in Bosnia and they did in Kosovo.
So you're saying that if the cost was $1 million a day and the United States gave $4 million, that didn't cover much of the cost of those forces?
Well, it's 4 days. So it means they were left out for 361 days. So it definitely is like peanuts. And they gave $15 million for humanitarian assistance. $50 million, 50. And it's funny because the way we look at it is like you give $50 million when they chop the arms of people to feed them. And when they feed them, these people chop their arms. And you give $4 million to actually the people that are preventing those who are chopping the arms of people, you give them $4 million to prevent. So instead of you using preventive mechanism, you're trying to manage the crisis, which is not manageable.
Is democracy going to survive in Sierra Leone, do you think? And as you had alluded to earlier, that with this peace accord, which brings the rebel forces within the government, that really changes the constitution.
Yes, because by virtue of the constitution, they cannot hold public office. So the attorney general had to go to parliament and make major amendments. And of course, the parliament had to allow that to go through, which is like your Congress. The legislative body had to make those changes. But one of the reasons why actually I'm in the United States is try to get support, because we believe that if we have to sustain some semblance of democracy, we have to have a lot of international presence and international resources to actually make sure the implementation of the agreement is done, because we're going to have our next election in the year 2001 in February. So our goal now as civil society is how do we hold on whatever little semblance of democracy we have up to the year 2000. And we believe that the only option that is left with us is to actually help to mobilize a lot of international support within to come to Sierra Leone in the presence of the United Nations military observers that will ensure the peace process is sustained, and also to keep the ECOMOG there so that whatever little space we have, we can manage to push this process towards the year 2000. And during that time, to actually mobilize a lot of international observers to go and monitor the election, so that because the agreement, the power share and everything in this agreement comes to an end the day before election.
Have there been death threats on you?
Well, yes, I've become a target, actually, mostly from the RUF. They have a website and all sorts of things have been said about me. And the rebel leader mentioned somewhere that he's going to take all the intellectuals, the teachers and everybody and puts them in a concentration camp and try to reorientate them. So, and he said in Lome, while I was there, to some people, I never spoke to him, that the revolution will actually start when he takes over power. The revolution itself has not started. And he's also mentioned in the same website that the long arm of the RUF will reach anybody who criticizes the peace agreement. These are things that he's made. I've become a specific target in their website, you know, so I'm a big show, you know, I enjoy it.
Every you enjoy time it?
They say all, well, what do you have to do? you can't tell them not to do it. I mean, that's what satisfies them.
How do you protect yourself?
So by the fact that they have chosen you as a target in their website to let people know, and they've even accused me of committing human rights violation. Can you imagine that? They said I have killed people. It's so interesting. So by doing that, they said I'm going to be investigated by the UN. All these sort of things, they're doing it specifically to target you. And I've been informed by various intelligent people in and out of Sierra Leone that they know that my life is in danger. But yes. I can't give up. This is my country. I mean, I have an opportunity to leave Sierra Leone any day I want to leave. I can have a job. I'm a professional in my own right. But I just feel that I'm so obligated to people I have worked with, to the people of Sierra Leone, to the women of Sierra Leone. And they look at you as somebody who is there to protect them and to show them the way. So if I leave, I feel it's a betrayal. So I have to be there. And I'll be there until I find it that it's impossible for me to stay there.
Well, Zainab Bagora, I want to thank you very much for joining us today on Fresh Air, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much.
Zainab Bagora is a human rights activist in Sierra Leone. She's visiting the States to meet with members of Congress and various humanitarian groups. This is Fresh Air.